Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Welcome, everybody, to the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Dale Luganbill. This week's weekend recap and rant, I get to talk about a little success story. Yes, indeedy-do. So let's go with the recap here. A little bit of a curveball. So the weather got a little nasty here in Minnesota. We had a snowstorm move in last Friday night, and my plan was to scout Clearwater Lake for the upcoming Minnesota Made Outdoors Tournament ice fishing event on the following Sunday. But this storm had made a mess of the roads Friday, and they were forecasting 30 to 40 mile an hour winds for Saturday, and my partner Joel couldn't, he had to work, so he wasn't going to be scouting with me. And I mean, the original plan really was to run out there Friday, you know, get a room and just wake up. It's not super far from where I live, but it's not terribly close either. Plus, ooh, here's a little teaser. Plus, I was going to go out to Hutchinson, Minnesota, and meet up with Joe Heintz. If you don't know who that is, he is a competition goose caller who I've had on this show a couple times now, and he had an amazing season this year with bands and just geese in general. He's got a ton of great stories, so I can't wait to hook up with him and get that podcast recorded. But because of the weather, I was like, I don't know if it's a good idea for me to be traveling out there. So we're going to reschedule that one. So I didn't end up going out there. And then I thought, well, I don't really want to be on that lake when it's blowing 30, 40 mile an hour by myself. I just don't think it's very smart. So I kind of wrote Saturday off. Except for when I woke up Saturday morning, let my dogs out, it was like beautiful. It was 23 degrees, like almost no wind. I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I should be on the lake right now. And it just really started to eat at me because we only had the one day of pre-fishing last week. And we did find some spots, but or pretty much a spot that I'll call it a spot because we found, of all our looking, we really only, you know, while running the camera, found three places that we saw good fish. And the one place was a school of really good bluegills. But by the time, you know, we got some other holes punched and tried to catch them to get a size reference, they were just gone. And I couldn't find them again. Couldn't camera, nothing. Like, well, I mean, they were here, but they're just gone. And we spent probably a good hour trying to relocate that school and never did. So the other spot that we had was like kind of kind of the same general piece of structure, but separated by a few hundred yards. So anyways, that's what we had. And there's a ton of this lake that I haven't checked off. So it was just killing me to not be able to get out there and scout that one more day. And of course, now it's nice in the morning. I mean, if I'd have left, you know, before light, I would have got out there. I would have had good 4, maybe even 5 hours of fishing before the weather got nasty, because the wind did kick up later in the afternoon and it got pretty sporty. And then, so I don't know. I don't, in hindsight, I guess the roads were still, from what I heard, they were still really crappy. So even though the weather was nice Saturday, had I tried to drive out there early morning, it might still not have been the greatest thing, but that's just what I'm going to tell myself anyways to feel better. So anyways, didn't get any scouting, poured over the map a little bit, kind of talked with Joel to see if we could come up with, you know, what are we going to do if our fish aren't where we saw them last week. And, you know, we had some options, but we just weren't too confident in that. But I do feel good about, or I should say I did feel good about the spot we were going to fish. It just, the structure, how it sets up. This lake has a reputation of here today, gone tomorrow, with like schools of fish. They roam basins a lot. You know, the transition from shallow water to super deep water is very quick. Like, these just drop off. So there's not a lot of that middle, you know, mid-level like flats area that on other lakes would hold, like just hold fish. Like, these fish are constantly on the move. And so yeah, this lake has that reputation. But this particular spot does seem kind of unique for that lake, in that it did have, I wouldn't say a large area of moderate depth, but relative to that lake, a large area of moderate depth. So I felt confident, and the structure on this is what I will call a saddle. A lot of people refer to saddles, but this particular structure on this lake, people had different names for it. But so I call it a saddle. So there's a real shallow area, you know, it comes up to like, you know, less than 10 feet. And then on the main lake side, just drops off into super deep water really quick. But on like the other side, it drops off down to 15, and then it comes back up, and then you have a big shallow flat before it gets to shore. So you have that little swath of moderate depth, and then if you went right or left of that, in this case east or west, then that also led to deeper, you know, like real deep water. So it's kind of a shortcut to two separate basins, if you will. That's kind of how I see it in my mind anyways, how I interpreted the map. So I felt confident that this is going to be a high traffic area, and maybe they're moving in and out of there, but I felt really good that the fish would still be there. And that was our plan. So day of the event, we get all set up. We are fourth flight, because we were first flight last time. And we take off, head to our spot, and we get there, and there was a little drama right away in the morning. I'm not going to get into that, because I don't really feel it needs to be brought up, but we'll just say it was a misunderstanding. Some words were had and whatever, it's fine. So anyways, there was a couple other teams in that general vicinity. And what we had hoped would happen is that low light period right away in the beginning part of the day would have the crappies using that area, because we had found them in low light, but on the evening side. So we were kind of a hope, but pretty good confidence that they would use that area. Sure enough, they were. It didn't take long, and I had first fish I stuck was a big rock bass, and they were just switched on. Everybody was catching big rock bass that day. It was ridiculous. But I was using a K-Rip on this brand new reel I just bought. I still gotta figure that thing out, because either I didn't set it up right, or I pressed some sort of free spool button or whatever, but I set the hook on this fish and I'm reeling and nothing's happening. This is a brand new reel. I mean, it's a good brand too. And I'm like, oh, it got off. And then I'm like, no, he's still there. And it's like, then I finally realized I wasn't actually taking up line. So finally, and here I'm thinking I can feel there's weight on it. I can feel it's a good fish. I'm thinking it's a big crappie. So I don't even mess. I literally like chuck the rod and just hand over hand that line like it's a tip up and get that fish up. And then to my surprise, it was a big rock bass. I was like, holy smokes. But so I got to run back to my rod box, grab another rod. So I grab a big pink Kenders jig, pink and white Kenders jig with like a white smoke fleck minnow tail, soft plastic, and I plunge that thing back down there, and it's not too long, and boom, I stick a really good crappie, boom, topside. All right, we're jamming, you know, boom, add another one. I think I put three in the box. I think Joel added one, and then as quick as that kind of picked up, bite just like died off. The crappies like moved out, and then we started getting more bluegill bites, and we could see the other teams were catching fish too. In fact, the one team that was closest to us, Jack and Jeremy, who were the team of the year last year, so real good sticks, we watched them catch just a giant, like, I think it was just under 14 inches. Whew, that thing was big, man. That was a nice fish. And you know, we had ours were like 12, a little over 12, I think we had one that was just under 13. And but man, that, I mean, compared to that 14, good Lord, that was a toad. That was big. And they caught another big one later in the day. But so we kept fishing that spot, and then we just weren't getting those crappie bites. I mean, we'd see somebody catch one, but they were really starting to get few and far between. And you know, and our hope was that we would get our crappie limit first thing in the morning, because that's kind of what was going to be the Achilles heel on that lake, was getting a full limit of crappies. And if you're new to the show, or you're new to the Minnesota Made tournament structure, I'll just quickly explain it. This is a sunfish and crappie tournament, and you get seven of each. If you get a full bag, so if you get seven crappies and seven bluegills, you get a bonus fish. So generally, you'll take a bonus crappie because they're usually bigger than bluegills. So getting a full limit is like everything, because it means an extra fish. Even if it's a small one, it's like, that's actually two fish. So yeah, we didn't get it. We're like, oh no. Oh, what, you know, it's like, well, at this point, let's slide off of this spot. Well, we kind of started to do a little like kind of a spiral search out from where we're at, to kind of probe some deeper water and see if maybe the crappies had just pushed off a little bit as they head out to the deeper water, roam the basin for the rest of the day, or wherever they disappear to. Cause in the middle of the day, they just like straight vanishing act. And that wasn't really working. It really just like even stopped marking any fish there for a while. And so we decided, all right, well, let's make a move down to our second spot in air quotes, because it's really only like a couple hundred yards away. Basically part of the same structure, but much closer to the deep water basin. So we slide out there, we drill our holes, and we start finding some fish, but they're bluegills and rock bass, even more rock bass. It's just great. Dude, there was a time I went on a rock bass tear. One hole, I had this school fired up, and I caught seven straight super chunk rock bass on seven straight drops. It was ridiculous. It got to the point where I started to recognize like their signature on the vex, the way they bit, and even like when I would set the hook, just the way, the kind of how they fought, like everything. I was like, oh, this is a rock bass, before I even made one crank on the reel. And sure enough, it would be a rock bass. This is just crazy. Any normal day, I would be so stoked to have that kind of rock bass day, because I have a soft spot in my heart for rock bass. Patrick Patches Olson, you got my back on this. They're cool little fish, man. They're like the groupers of freshwater. I just like them, and they taste good. They get bad reputation. People just don't keep them. They think they're garbage, but they're not. And I think they actually have more meat on them per inch than any other panfish. They're just stocky. But anyways, they don't help me on tournament day, so they're wasting my time. And so we're still moving around, because our idea was like, well, we don't have our full crappie bag, but we're halfway there, a little over halfway there. We needed three more. But we found some really, really good bluegills in this spot pre-fishing. So we're like, well, if we can at least get a solid, like a real solid bluegill bag, you know, we won't win, but we should at least be, you know, in the upper half, you know. So that was kind of our plan. And we kept moving around. And this part of the day, it really gets to where you check 20 holes and see absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden you go to the next hole, and it might be as close as like 4 or 5 feet away, and boom, it's just fish all the way to the bottom. You're like, holy crap, here's the school. And then you drop down there as fast as you can before they move on, because these schools are just, they're moving in and out, or they're sliding along this seam. And really was a seam, because the depth range that the fish were using was super narrow. So it was like 12 to 13 feet was what they wanted. We found a couple stragglers in 14 and a couple stragglers in 11. But either way, if you went to 15, nothing. If you went to 10, nothing. Like, it was that 12 to 13 was the magic. So once we kind of narrowed that down, then I just did this tight weave with our holes up and down that break for, you know, a decent stretch. And we just kept working up, back and down, back up, back down, back up, back down. Just kept checking fresh holes and trying to stay on those fish. I mean, I guess you probably could stay still and just wait for the fish to come through, as it did seem like certain particular holes ended up having more fish in them. Just how it worked out. Was it chance? I don't know. But I honestly, I'll be totally honest with you, that might be the way to do it. I just can't fish that way. I go stir crazy if I'm staring at that vex and I'm not marking fish for more than 5 minutes. I got to move. I can't do it. It's just too much. My brain just starts going, and there's just too much background noise, and I'm not focused, and I just need to stick to the game plan and go find fish. So we just kept moving. Now, the day's wearing on. There's like only a couple hours left in the day, and we start thinking, boy, sure it'd be nice. We just need those three crappies to get our bag. It's really unlikely, but we had talked pre-fishing and scouting, because we know this lake holds schooling fish out in the basins, but they're just really hard to find. You have to drill a ton of holes, and it's kind of chance if you actually intercept one of these traveling schools. But if you do, you can pick up, you know, a lot of times they'll bite, and a lot of times they're really good ones. So we were kind of debating. We're like, well, do we kind of back out and go to the deep water basin, which is, you know, connected to this spot where we think they're coming from or going to, and see if we can't drum up a crappie or two? I mean, we upgraded our gills a little bit, but we honestly didn't get the big fish that we had found pre-fishing. I know that old same song and dance, but that's just how it was. And then we kind of settled on, well, let's go to the other side of this deep water where it starts to come back up again, go in the same seam, that 12, 13 foot seam, and it should be the same over there. And there's nobody fishing over there, so maybe just some fresh water, you know, quieter spot, maybe they'll have some fish. We're like, yeah, let's go try that. So we boogie over there, and that wasn't a big move. And we drill a bunch of holes, probably 20 holes, start checking those. I don't think we marked a single fish. So now here we are back at, oh man, now we just wasted a half hour on that. Do we back out? Do you want to do the basin thing? We're like, I don't know. Well, in the back of my mind, the spot we were just at, not only was there a shit ton of rock bass using it, and we were catching bluegills there, but I actually caught a 19-inch walleye there, which came home with me. And after I caught that walleye, the way it bit and the way it fought, I was like, I lost two more walleyes. Just, I guarantee they're walleyes, because the way they fought and the kind of the way the hook popped out. Because when I finally got that walleye up through the hole, I don't even know what was holding it. The hook just literally fell out of its mouth. I mean, I'm using like a 3 millimeter tungsten jig, super tiny hook, small soft plastic bait, and on 1 pound test, and I catch a walleye. You know, standard walleye gear. Yeah, whatever. So my brain starts to go, there's all this life over there. There's predators over there with the rock bass and the walleye. And we, like, there's largemouth bass over there too. So I'm like, it just, to me, makes sense that a crappie has got to move in and out of there throughout the day too. Why wouldn't, if there's food there, why wouldn't they use it? you know. And at this point in time, like, it was a tough bite. Like, you really had to work these fish to trigger them to bite. You know, it was pretty hot that first hour in the morning, but it really slowed down. When that sun got high and kind of broke through the clouds a little bit, that bite got real tough. And I just felt like they should use it. That's what I just kept telling myself in the back of my mind. And while we were debating going out to the basin or to fish that spot, I said, let's just go over there. Let's go over there. Let's try to upgrade those gills. And I think we have a decent shot at, you know, maybe getting lucky and getting a crappie. So we go back over there, and within, I would say, 15 minutes, boom, I stick another big 12-inch plus crappie. Oh, mama, you've never seen somebody so happy in all your life. Dude, I was so pumped up. I was like, yes, this is, I was like completely reinvigorated, ready to rock, so focused, like laser focused. And now I'm just like, every mark is a potential crappie. I don't get, you know, where I may have been brushing it off like, oh, it's probably a rock bass, or that's just another bluegill or whatever. It's like, nope, that might be a big crappie. And so I started jigging like it would be a crappie, for whatever that means. The cadence, I guess, that I was using. And then a few minutes later, Joel sticks another good crappie. I'm like, oh man, this might happen. One more. We need one more. And then he catches one, and he's like, oh, it's a little one. He brings it up and he looks at it. He's like, they only have to be 8 inches though to be a legal fish. And at this point, I mean, like I was saying earlier, that limit, getting 7 crappies and 7 bluegills, is super important because you get that bonus fish. So we measured it 8.5 inches. Yes, that is a full limit. So at worst, now we get to weigh in 8 bluegills and 7 crappies, which we either call like an upside down bag or a goofy bag. I like to call it a goofy bag. It's more fun than upside down. But anyways, but we still have a little bit of time. We got like 20 minutes and we have to sort some fish. We have 20 minutes of like fishing time before we need to pack up and then, you know, drive back to the landing. So just keep fishing hard. I'm like, man, if we can get one more bonus crappie, especially a good one, that's really going to help our weights. And we might actually have a chance at winning this thing. And then we didn't get it. Time ran out. I think I made one small upgrade on our gills. And again, never did get any of those big chunky gills, but we had, you know, a good average. I mean, I think we had like, you know, 8.5 to 9 inch bluegill average, which is, you know, you want tens. I mean, that's what you want. I mean, those are the trophies, those are the tubs. But, you know, asking for a full limit of those is pretty ridiculous. But so we had a decent bag of bluegills, but we had that full bag, and that's huge. And in talking to other people, it sounds like everybody else was struggling to get those bites too all day long, and a lot of people didn't have full bags. So I was like, well, after watching Jack and Jeremy catch, you know, 2 almost 14-inch fish, actually, I think they got one that was over 14. I was like, they got it. And they're a good team, great sticks. So I was like, I'm sure they have a full bag too. We don't have those giant crappies. So I was like, well, we probably didn't win, but I feel good we're going to finish in the top, you know, because I just don't think everybody else has full bags. So we had to weigh in, and so the way we had to wait like so long, because the way it's like flip-flopped, you know, the position that you placed in the last event, and we came in sixth. So you know, you kind of flip that, and that's the, you know, that's how you weigh in. So last place would weigh in first, and then so on and so forth. So we had to wait quite a bit. And as people started weighing in, and, you know, of course you're waiting your turn, you're talking to everybody, and everybody's saying it was tough, and a lot of people didn't have full bags. It looked like only 4 teams were going to weigh a full bag today. So just that alone, it's like, well, we're top 5. I mean, that's pretty good. That has been our goal for this year. So might not be good enough to win, but at least we're going to be up there. We're going to get the points. And so we weigh our bag, and it comes in way better than I thought it was going to be. 10 pounds, I think it was 0.92. 10.92 is what it was, I believe. And which surprised me. That's a good bag. I did not think we had that solid of a bag, because that 8.5-inch crappie in there, I mean, he doesn't hardly weigh anything. And then, you know, our gills were good, but not great. So, but then the winners of last week, the last events, went up to weigh, and I saw them dumping their bucket in. And I was like, well, it was fun sitting in the hot seat for a second. And so they put their fish on the scale, and everybody's looking at it, and they're like, it's another 10-pound bag. I'm like, just like almost like getting like stretching, getting ready to get up out of the seat. And then they read it off, and I don't remember what the weight was, but it wasn't 10 point, I think it was 10.4-ish, somewhere in there. And then it was like, wait a minute, did we just win? I think we just won. And then, you know, I was talking to Jack, and he was like, you know, because I'm sure he was feeling everybody else out, and he's like, you guys won this. And this was early. This was before we weighed in. I'm like, you think? No, I didn't think so. And I didn't know if they had a full bag. I assumed they had a full bag, and that's when he told us that they didn't have a full bag. I was like, oh, really? Holy crap. He's like, yeah. I was like, oh, man, but you got those two toads in there, though. And but he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you guys got it. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think so. But then turns out we did. He was standing right there, and he's like, told you. I've never been so happy to be wrong in all my life. And it was weird, man. It was like, I was super stoked, but also felt kind of weird, because you chase this thing. This desire to win one of these events, and you know, you watch other people win it and hold up those plaques. And if you've been listening to the show, you know how much I just wanted those plaques more than the money, more than any prize on the prize table. Like, I just want that validation of being number one, at least for a day, you know? And now here we actually got it. And it's like, I didn't know how to act. It was weird. It was really weird. Very surreal. And I'm still stoked about it. My mind still goes back to that event, and I got to get refocused, because, you know, I did a little write up on my Facebook page, and then we shared it on the Minnesota Made Outdoors page. And in the end, or no, you know what? Actually, it was a comment I made on Justin Squeak's write up. He had a great write up on it too. And I really appreciated his insight and his, like, spirit and tenacity, because they didn't do well on that day. They really struggled. But instead of getting down, he was just like, and now I'm more focused, and I know, you know, like, he just wants to learn. And I just really, 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 really respect that. I thought that was great. And I said, hey, here's the thing. You're only as good as, you know, because he was complimenting me and congratulating me on winning that day. And I was like, here's the thing, you're only ever as good as your last event. So yeah, we won, and I'm super stoked about that, but the next event's a new lake, and we can easily come in wherever, you know. And as far as chasing that team of the year title, there's only four events, so now we're halfway through. And even though we took first place in one event, we're still behind in the overall point standing, because the team that won the first event, they took second in this one. So they're still leading in the points. They are the team to beat. So I'm kind of, even though we won, and I have that like feeling of accomplishment and being proud of that accomplishment, there's still this, we still have a lot of work to do. We're still not there. They're the team to beat. So still kind of that underdog feeling. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's, you know, you never want to get complacent. I never want to think that I'm better than anybody. I mean, this league has a ton of really, really good sticks in it. And it's, you know, it's just one event. You know, we did well one event, and they didn't do as well that particular event. But we've been on the other side of that. You know, I mean, how many times have I said, like, we just didn't get the fish we found pre-fishing? We just, if only this would have happened, if only this would have happened, we might have been there. You know, that's how it goes. It worked out for us this time, but there's no guarantees it's going to work out for us for the next event or the next two events. So we just got to go out there and a race to victory. Pressure's off now. I don't have to worry so much about getting that plaque. I mean, that thing, now I have one, and now I need another one. But now it's points. Now the goal isn't so much that plaque, is I want those points, because now that we're this close, team of the year is a realistic possibility. We just have to do our part and make sure we fish clean, scout smart, be efficient, make sure all your gear is intact and ready to rock and roll. I mean, you do your best, but even begin, I made three, like, I went to go drill the first hole, my K drill with a Milwaukee Fuel drill on it. It made like three rotations and seized up. It still doesn't work. I got to bring it in and see if we can get that fixed. Thankfully, we have two augers, so we weren't dead in the water, but I mean, that definitely hinders you when you're down, one whole auger. So, you do the best you can. You try to maintain your equipment, make sure everything is good to go. Those are the things you can control. What you can't control is the fish. So, yeah, there it is. There's your weekend recap. We made it. We got the plaque, and I'm super stoked. But you guys should really, if you haven't done so already, go on to Facebook, find Minnesota Made Outdoors. A lot of people did write-ups this week, and they did some write-ups for the last one too. They're all really great little write-ups about, their perspective of that event. And I really enjoyed reading them all. I hope some more people write some. I'd still like to read some more. I find it fascinating to get other people's perspective on that same day, it's pretty interesting. So if you haven't done that, go on Facebook, find Minnesota Made Outdoors, and follow along there. Give them a like. I'd really appreciate it. And then you can follow along what's going on with Team Full Scale Outdoors. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And while we're on that subject, so the next event, if you're here in Minnesota, it's going to be on Green Lake up by, between Isani and Princeton. And there's a really cool thing, though, the day before. So February 1st, Minnesota Made Outdoors is teaming up with Hometown Hero Outdoors, and we're setting up a big event. We have a big event set up, I should say, where we're going to do tournament-style fishing with a bunch of vets, active military, law enforcement personnel. And so there's a bunch of guys from Minnesota Made. We're going to volunteer. We're going to help them out. And so we'll kind of be like guiding different teams of these Hometown Hero teams, and it's going to be awesome. We're just going to take them around, and there's going to be a ton of really good prizes. Traeger Grills are going to be out there grilling up some bomb food. I can't remember all the sponsors right now, but if you go on the Minnesota Made Outdoor page, you'll find all that stuff, and it's just going to be, dude, I'm so looking forward to it. It's going to be great. It's just going to be a ton of fun. And then the following day is the tournament. So we're really not even going to get that day of scouting. So it's kind of this weekend to scout for that lake, for that tournament, because we're hosting that event the day before the tournament. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a busy weekend. So I'll have a lot to talk about on next week's recap and rant for sure. So tune into that. Make sure you share this with anybody you think would be interested, would like it, rate and review it, all that good stuff. I'll tell you to do that stuff at the end of it. So let's get on to this week's rant. I'm going to piggyback off of last week. So if you listen to last week's rant, I talked about how the Grand Tetons were going to shoot the invasive mountain goats, aerial gun them down, hundreds of them, and just leave them lay. And so I went on my big diatribe about how I think that's asinine. Why aren't we using hunters? Got all up in arms about that. And then a couple days later, I see this article get posted, and I get a little breath of hope falls across me, and I'm like, all right, I'm not the only one that thinks this is a stupid idea. So I'm going to read part of this article by, hope I don't mess this dude's name up, but I know I will, Mike Koschmerl from the Jackson Hole Daily. So the state board is condemning the Ariel Teton goat shooting. So thank God. The Wyoming Game and Fish Department is coming through. So I'm just going to read you a little bit of this article. State wildlife officials are blasting Grand Teton National Park's decision to lead off its mountain goat eradication efforts with aerial gunning. Meeting in Cheyenne on Wednesday, the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission broached the topic unexpectedly and signed off on a resolution opposing the park's plan for this winter. Instead of shooting the non-native goats from a helicopter, the government-appointed board is seeking a hunt to open to volunteers. Yes, and approach the park has also authorized. So that is what, please and thank you. That makes so much more sense. Quote, having government personnel kill mountain goats from helicopters and leaving them to rot and be wasted is unacceptable, end quote. But Game and Fish Commissioner President David Ryle, and he wrote to the acting park superintendent, I am not trying to pronounce that dude's name, Gopal Nujbail? Yeah, anyway, go find this article and read it for yourself. The Grand Teton National Park's, quote, refusal to utilize statutory options allowing skilled volunteers to harvest the mountain goats is short-sighted and sets a dangerous precedent. And I could not agree more, end quote. So at least they had that. We have that. So there's people in Wyoming, officials, that realize the problem, at least in my eyes, of just leaving these things a waste. When you have an army, a literal army of hunters that are willing to go help reduce these populations and manage it the way we think it's managed. I mean, I still think it's kind of goofy, but I'll leave that. If you want to know what I'm talking about, go back, listen to last week's recap and rant, and you can fast forward through the recap part and get to the rant, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Just my kind of concept of what, how we perceive nature, how it's like so static. However we find it is just like how it's always supposed to be. I find that kind of weird because nature is always in flux. So anyways, I'm already repeating myself. Go back, listen to that one, and then come back to this one. All right. But anyways, so that is great. It was really refreshing to see that. And then the wind gets knocked out of my sails because a few days later, I read another article where the national park officials say they're going to go ahead with the shoot anyways. So I find it a huge waste. Oh, and there's a bunch of other stuff too. It's being condemned by animal rights activists. It's like, this is one of those things, like some people could say, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. No, they're not my friend. They aren't. They don't want them. They want stupid shit ideas, like, you know, sterilizing them or going there and relocating. Like, wait, you're going to relocate 200 goats? I would say the question would be, do you have any idea what that topography is like? Do you have any idea what you're asking them to do in the winter weather? But no, they don't have any idea, because most animal rights activists have no concept of how actual nature works. They just don't. You probably heard me say it a zillion times, but I'll say it again. It's laughable that animal rights activists, animal lovers, in air quotes, think that they're doing good for animals. They know nothing about these animals. Hunters know about these animals. They know where they sleep, what they eat, what they smell like, what their tracks look like, what their fur feels like, color of their eyes. It's so frustrating that actual policy can be set and government officials can be swayed just by the numbers of over-emotional people with knee-jerk reactions to, like, an image of something. Obviously, Cecil the Lion is, like, a huge, the biggest example of that. And it's just, it's crazy. Which, by the way, I'll plug another old one. If you haven't listened to, I did an episode with a big game preserve from South Africa. And go back and listen to that one. What a fantastic conversation I had with Hannes. It was great. I've already listened to it again myself, and I was there. I mean, it's just, there's so much good information in there, and the viewpoints of, like, they're trying to, I'll get into this. Hold on. I'm going to reel back. Sorry, my brain's going a million miles an hour. I'm going to try to wrap up my little Grand Teton rant here, animal rights activist rant, and then I'm going to give you some homework. I don't care what the animal rights activists have to say about killing. I mean, here's the thing. We're not relocating these things. They're either going to manage them, and how the park's going to manage them by killing them, and they did say they were going to allow people to get, you know, to try to go in there, and if they can get some of the meat, they're going to be allowed to go get some of the meat. So that's at least something. But hopefully this conversation between the national parks and the Game and Fish Commission can get together and come up with a resolution and maybe a better plan. Like what I said in the last one is, like, why don't you just have don't wait till the herd gets to 200, 300. You know, if you see 50 on the mountainside, then set up a time and start have hunts, kill them all. I mean, people will pay money, and don't make it like a super rich trophy thing. You know, $50 for a tag or $100 for a tag, go up there, you know, and no holds barred. If you want to shoot a lamb, just shoot a lamb. I mean, they don't want them up there. So, I mean, I would have no problems in a situation like that where it's a cull. I would be completely guilt-free going up there and shooting a nice, young, tender mountain goat lamb, or I guess it would be a kid because it's a goat. That would be fantastic. I've never even had mountain goat, but I'm all in. Put me in, coach. Dude, that would be awesome. So there, we'll tack that. I'm going to keep an eye on that store for you guys, or follow along yourself. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. So follow me on the Facebook, leave a message on there about it. You leave a comment on this podcast, or also I do have an email. If you'd like to email me about the show, any kind of question or comments or guest suggestions or topic suggestions, anything like that, it's Full Scale Outdoors. Is it at Full Scale? Wow, do I even know? It's DaleLuganville@FullScaleOutdoors.com. So, yeah, DaleLuganville@FullScaleOutdoors.com. So send me some emails, and we'll get to that. Now, so piggybacking off of the African Safari podcast episode that I did, there on Netflix, there is a documentary called Trophy, and it's all about exactly what we just talked about. So if you want like a visual representation of what's going on out there, check it out. It's on Netflix. It's called Trophy. And the main thing in there, it's about legalizing the sale of rhino horn. And I know that sounds like, why would you want to do that? We got to protect the rhinos. But since they banned the sale of rhino horn, poaching has grown. The poaching deaths of rhinos just increases every year by like a lot. And it's just keep going up. Rhino horn is worth more than gold right now. So these people are literally willing to kill you, risk their lives to get into these fenced in preserves and kill a rhino and cut the horn off. And here's what happens when you legalize the sale of rhino horn. Yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, people over in wherever, whatever country thinks ground up rhino horn is good for the wang, whatever. Yeah, it's dumb. It's not scientific. But if there's a market for it, they're still killing these animals to get it. Like, so why not legal lift the ban, let them have their stupid rhino horn dick pills? Because when they're farmed, when you give those animals legal value, you literally have rhino horns where they will breed rhinos. So they will have lots of rhinos, and they don't have to kill the rhino to get the horn. The horn grows back. They cut off like 2/3 every 2 years, and you just have a steady supply of rhino horn. I mean, it's like a no. You'll have more rhinos than you know what to do with at some point in time. I never thought of it that way before. Until Hannes brought it up, and then I saw that Trophy documentary, and I'm like, this makes so much sense. It just makes so much sense. I mean, to the extent that they should do the same thing with ivory. I mean, you just have more elephants if you do that, because right now you can't trade ivory. So what happens? It just goes to a black market trade. It doesn't go away. People don't stop buying ivory. People don't stop killing animals to get it. It's just a higher risk, and you drive the value way up, so it's even more attractive to would-be criminals and underground. So we have to start thinking differently about that kind of value. And hopefully, you know, a big part of that is like not being able to bring back even like lion trophies back to America. And in this trophy documentary, they talk about that, how like they really need to, like, America's their number one economic resource, and that they want to make sure that that stays that way. And they've been losing that battle. They're losing that battle to those animal rights activists, those people that lead with their hearts and not with their brains. And I don't know how we get this across to them so we can show them. Because, you know, there's all sorts of scenarios where animal populations are out of control. They don't want people to hunt them, but they still get killed. You know, the example would be mountain lions in California. They banned mountain lion hunting, but they still end up killing like 200 lions a year, and they just get dumped. They don't get utilized. So it's just, it doesn't make any sense. So really what they have a problem with is somebody taking some sort of enjoyment out of taking an animal's life. Not that the animal died. Sometimes you have to manage populations. Some of them can see that. They just don't want somebody to do it recreationally. And that falls into some sort of ideology, almost like a religion. I would say it is a religion to these people because they're so fanatical about it. But so there, I don't want to reiterate myself. Check it out, Trophy, Netflix, really good documentary. And so that's this week's weekend recap and rant. Thank you for listening. Here's my little pitch for everything. Go out and if you haven't done so already, follow me on Facebook, Instagram, fullscale_outdoors.com, Dale Lugemill on Snapchat, Go Wild. Find me on the Go Wild app, which you'll just love it. So just if you don't have the Go Wild app, download it. Check it out. Super cool. I have a ton of fun on there. And if you're available, come out February 1st, Hometown Heroes Outdoors, Minnesota Made Outdoors, team effort. Event, come out, cheer on the veterans, come out to the live weigh-in. It's gonna be a ton of fun. So with that, I am going to sign off, everybody. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Rate, review, 5 stars. You guys are the best. Whatever your passion, follow it. Full Scale.